There's an important symbol of American freedom that is not well known, even by people who are pretty knowledgeable about America's history, including America's Judeo-Christian roots. And the concept or the symbol is the Liberty Tree. What is that? We're going to talk about this right now with Dr. Peter Loback, the President Emeritus and founder of the Providence Forum. And he and I had the privilege of co-writing a big, thick book called George Washington's Sacred Fire. And Dr. Loback, it's so great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Newcomb. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Okay, so what is the Liberty Tree?
Well, it's a beautiful story. Basically, going back into antiquity, we can understand that trees have had a very significant part in human history. There's an old Germanic custom that by an ancient tree, there was a belief that the gods dwelt there because it's so big and old. And so when Boniface, a missionary to Germany, came along, one of the things he did to teach the people that the tree did not possess God is he took the tree down. He said, we don't worship trees. God is greater. He created these. So there's something majestic about it in the culture. But another aspect of the ancient tree was that because of its size, it became a wonderful meeting place. In fact, you can read in the Bible, it talks about by the tree of something people would meet. So trees became identifying spots. And so in the American story, where it really becomes vital, is in 1765. This is the year when the Stamp Act is now put in place. Remember, after the French and Indian War, a parliament with the king's blessing decides to tax the colonies to pay for what they said was the cost of waging the war. And this was done without their desire and agreement. It was just imposed upon them. And so they went to the Boston Common, the green area that was set aside by the early settlers, where a tree had been planted by the settlers, and now it had been growing for over a century. So it was a big tree. And so this big tree in the middle of the Boston Common became the place where the Sons of Liberty gathered to protest the Stamp Act. And there they hung Lord Bute from a tree in effigy. They flew the flag of the Sons of Liberty, and they protested the Stamp Act. And they dubbed that tree where the Sons of Liberty gathered as the Liberty Tree. Now, fascinatingly, when the British decided to give Boston its black eye and say, we're not going to have this going on around here, one of the things they did is they chopped down the tree and turned it into firewood.
Do you know what year?
I don't remember what year that was, okay. But it was after the Stamp Act as it starts to unfold. So they removed the tree. It's no longer a significant part of that story because we're showing you we're in charge. We're not having some homegrown protest. Well, as the Stamp Act is set aside, but the issues keep coming along, we know about the Intolerable Acts and all the things that happen as taxes on other goods come along, and the fact that the king says, I have a right to even the score any time I want. Well, the symbol of a tree becomes a movement symbol for the Sons of Liberty. So you'll find it showing up in many different places in the colonial era where the Sons of Liberty would come to town and they would meet under an ancient tree and talk about their grievances, their resistance to what they thought was injustice, the setting aside of constitutional provisions by the parliament over the colonies. And so the Liberty Tree becomes an icon. And what's interesting is that in some places where there was not an ancient tree, they would take a tall tree mast like would be used for a ship, and they would set it up, and they would call it their Liberty Pole and Cap. So they didn't have a Liberty Tree. And now what was interesting about the pole and cap is that this goes way back into antiquity. There was a time when General Suetonius was invading Phrygia on behalf of the Roman Empire, and he sent out a message to all the people of the city, and he said, any slave or person who wants to be free, come and stand under my pole that he lifted up, his battle lance, and he had taken Apuleius, that was a slave's cap, and he put it on the top of his pole and lifted up and said, if you stand under this pole and cap, you'll be free. So he's calling the slaves to join him as he was getting ready to invade the city. And that symbol then of the Liberty Pole and Cap becomes the equivalent in the American story of a Liberty Tree. And that actually happened at a place called Golden Hill, which today we know as Wall Street in New York City. There was a Poland cap put up there. The Sons of Liberty put up. The British knocked it down. The Sons of Liberty put it back up. The British knocked it down. A few weeks later, there was one that was put up clad in iron with a Liberty cap on top. And it stood for about 6 months. And then in taking it down was the first recorded skirmish between the British and the Americans. It was only a few weeks after that in Boston we have the famous Boston Massacre. But the first true scuffle between the citizens and the military that led to the revolution was over a Liberty Poland cap, which was a Liberty tree. So now to fast forward the story, the last standing Liberty tree was in Annapolis, Maryland. There was an ancient tree right on St. John's College campus, right across the street from the Naval Academy in Annapolis. And that tree came down in 1999 when Hurricane Floyd came through. It was damaged and it was removed and thrown into a landfill. And the Providence Forum had the joy of rescuing that wood. But the reason that tree was so important is because under that tree, that's where the Sons of Liberty of Maryland read the Declaration publicly in Annapolis. Also, it was under that tree where Francis Scott Key went to school, and that's the man who wrote our national anthem. So it has a lot of history. So some of that wood has been preserved, and I can tell you about what it did if you want to hear more about that. But that shows you that the story has continued, and there are places that still bear the name of a Liberty Pole. In New Jersey, for example, there's a place called Pole Tavern. It's the name of a town. Its historic name was Liberty Pole Tavern because there was once a Liberty Pole there. And so this icon spread all across the early part of America. So that's part of it. And so on coins, early coins in America, you'll find Liberty trees. You'll also find the Liberty Pole and cap being used regularly. And if you look at this flag of New Jersey, the flag of New York, and the flag of Virginia, you'll find a Liberty Pole and cap on all three of them, and nobody knows what they are, including people from the state. I've had people look at them, and they don't know what it is, and I have to tell them the story.
It's
quite remarkable.
Yeah, when you talk about those flags, you're talking about the current flag. You're not talking about something, you know, from a colonial era.
These are the state flags of each of those states, New Jersey, New York, and also Virginia. They all have a Liberty Pole and cap, cool, which is the equivalent of a Liberty tree.
Okay.
By the way.
Yeah, go ahead. No, after you.
The great Paul Revere, the freedom writer of Boston, who is also a great silversmith and an engraver, when he was helping to engrave the masthead for the newspapers that were up in Boston, he included a Liberty pole and cap, or equivalent of a Liberty tree, on the masthead of the newspapers that he made.
Neat. Okay, now you said that the last of the true Liberty trees was was damaged beyond repair in Hurricane Floyd, which was 1999. But if that's the last one, how many were there? I mean, the first one you said was the one in Boston, the tree that the Puritans planted. They had to have, because you said it lasted there for 100 years and it was torn down sometime or cut down in the 1760s or maybe early 70s by the British. So how many trees, actual Liberty trees, were there where these patriots would meet underneath the foliage, kind of almost in a secret way? It's almost like a little chapel there under the tree, you know, under the protection of all those leaves and branches.
That's right. No one knows the answer. That's the truth. We have historical records from different places. I've uncovered history of it, of places in Pennsylvania, places in South Carolina, in Rhode Island, and obviously Boston. But we don't know how many there were. And Liberty poles and caps, they showed up in different ways. There's a wonderful story, if I had time, to tell you about one being up in Maine, that where the whole battle over a ship that landed in port was over Liberty pole and cap. And it was taken while the British were attending the Anglican worship service, and the Patriots took the ship and hijacked it. And the leader was a man named O'Brien. And so we've had like three Navy ships called the O'Brien in honor of that. But that whole conflict occurred because they wouldn't take down their Liberty pole and cap. So we don't know how many. Some articles have been written. And by the way, Jerry, there's a book that you and I have to get done that might be our sequel to George Washington's Sacred Fire that the Providence Forum needs to produce. It's on the Sons of Liberty. And we'll tell these stories. I've got a lot of research.
Oh, neat.
I'm going to share it with you along the way, and maybe we can begin to identify some answers to the question you just raised.
Sure. Now, you through the Providence Forum, rescued the remnants, or whatever you would call it, all that wood from the last of the Liberty trees, the one that was, went down in was it Maryland or Delaware?
It was Maryland.
Maryland. Okay, so I understand that somehow through bud grafting, and I'm not a horticulturalist in the least, but somehow new trees are able to be created, and Providence Forum, by God's grace, has been able to plant Liberty trees in different places, even different capitals, dozens and dozens of these, and you've given speeches and so forth. And tell us about that.
Yes, so basically what happened, a young man by the name of Mark, in Maryland, saw this tree getting chopped down, and he went and rescued the wood when it was thrown into landfill. He had a great personal expense. He had to buy the rights to re-get the wood back and all of that. But he also collected the seeds. And so the seeds then began to be an opportunity to create seedlings. And from that tree, there were about 13 or 14 seedlings that sprouted, and those were the sons of the last Liberty tree, and those got planted. One of those is growing right out at the gate of Mount Vernon, where George Washington's great houses. We were able to plant one there and other places. But then also, now that we had the seedlings that were, but you only had so many, but because of the miracle of great horticultural work, you can now do what's bud grafting, which is to take the stock of the kind of tree this is, which is a tulip poplar, and then to take a growth from one of the seedlings that are now more mature trees, and you graft it on it. So from that point on, every place up, all the way up from where it was attached, which will grow perhaps to be 100 feet tall. It's a big tree, the tulip poplar. It's very tall. This now is the equivalent of a direct descendant of the last Liberty tree. So we have been having the joy of planting the seedlings in many places. One of our beautiful examples is in the state of Missouri. The 4-H Club, who obviously love horticultural work, have joined together with a group called Resurrecting Lives, which is a ministry to post-traumatic stress syndrome soldiers, veterans. And they bring the veterans together with the tree and they plant it. And every county in Missouri, there is now a Liberty Tree seedling, a bud graft that's growing there. And it's a place of healing for the veterans, a place of honoring their work. And families come back year after year to remember the sacrifice of their own family and those who've gone before them to have the gift of liberty. Remember, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Liberty is not free. There is a great quote from Thomas Jefferson who said, "The Liberty Tree must be watered from time to time with the blood of the patriots." What an amazing set. He knew what the Liberty Tree was. And there's a wonderful poem that the famous Thomas Paine wrote about the Liberty Tree as well. So it was a beautiful icon. We need to rediscover it because it is a wonderful intergenerational and past history piece of reminding us that liberty lives only as we preserve it and pass it on to the next generation.
Mm, excellent. Okay, we have 1 minute left. What would you like to see if you had your druthers when it comes to these Liberty trees, seedlings, see them all over the capitals of all the different states? What would you like?
My prayer is that patriot-loving families all across America where tulip poplar trees are capable of growing will prayerfully consider getting one for their community, maybe one for their property, and having a dedication and a rededication of themselves to liberty. We need to do this because liberty is only as strong as each generation. I think it was Ronald Reagan who said, "Liberty is only one generation away from extinction." Mm. We need to preserve it for ourselves and those who come after us. That's my vision, and I know the Providence Forum had that as its vision, and in your hands, Jerry, I pray it will continue on until we cover the country with that great message of the Liberty Tree.
Amen. All right, God bless you, and thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Loback. Appreciate it.
Thank